Hey guys, it's Steve Baker, sometimes known as the Pragmatic Constitutionalist, although I've been called much worse names in recent days. I have no idea how long this podcast is going to be because I am going to rant and rave just a little bit. I got a little riled up at some of the reactions to a recent article that I wrote that was related to, once again, January 6th, and some comments and some assertions and statements that I made that got people pretty angry. And it's interesting because I can't tell you how often I read comments on whatever the topic is that it's very, very obvious that the person commenting has not actually read the entire article. They've either taken the teaser paragraph at the beginning of the article, if I'm linking to something else or linking back to locals, whatever the case may be, and then they base their reaction on having not read it. And it's, as I said, it's pretty obvious when that takes place. Sometimes they skim through and their brain, their mind, their eyes catches certain key words. They hone in on a sentence, and then that becomes the obsession of their reaction. And again, taking that out of context, it's very obvious that they've not processed or are actually paid attention again to the entire article. Sometimes they may actually read the entire thing, but once again, they become obsessed over one particular statement or comment and take everything out of context. The other issue is a little bit more understandable, is there's absolutely no way that you can cover everything on a big story all in one short readable article. And by short and readable, that's a whole nother pet peeve of mine. How many people will write TLDR, too long, didn't read, on a common 1,000-word or 1,200-word piece, which is basically typically magazine, newspaper, blog article length. Obviously, we all write things much longer sometimes, and I've written articles as long as 9,500 words or more. I kind of expect that when that happens, and when that does happen, I try to do a podcast recording of it so I can read the whole thing out and for people that don't want to take that much time to read. But we do live in a meme drive-through microwave oven generation at this point, and so it becomes very difficult for people to process anything longer than meme length, it seems. And so often the negative reactions I'll get from an article are based on the fact that they have just skimmed keywords, something jumps out, they don't like it, they comment, boom. But what they don't do, or what they don't understand, is that I've probably written tens of thousands of words on this particular subject over the course of time, and we're dealing with January 6th again today, so this is something that I've spent a lot of time on, obviously. I've spent, not only was I there, not only do I have an eyewitness perspective on what took place, but I also have written dozens of articles on this related to not only what I experienced, but also to the aftermath and to the political reaction and to the investigation of certain characters involved in all manner and all different aspects of what took place that day. So when somebody takes even just one article and assumes that they can accuse me of whatever, when I'll read a couple of these accusations as we move forward, and they don't take the entirety of my experience and my commentary on that into account, then they can't possibly have an accurate description, certainly not one accurate enough to label me as, well, again, I'll cover those labels here as we read through some of those. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to actually read through the article itself, and I'll probably riff on the article above and beyond what I initially wrote. And then I'm going to go and I'm going to actually read some of the comments and some of the reactions that took place. This particular article that I'm talking about was the one I just posted a couple of days ago, entitled Saturday Morning J6 Pulp Fiction Reading. So I'm just going to dive in and I'm going to start reading, and we'll take it from there. The article begins thusly. The first message I saw on my phone this morning that was Saturday morning, was a forwarded story about one of the North Carolina-based Proud Boys who has pled guilty to charges stemming from his activities on January 6, 2021. I'd not yet read about his specific case, though I've read through over 100 indictments and legal filings against others. Now, see, there's another, I'm riffing now. This is another point. There are people who have absolutely entrenched opinions about what took place that day, and they weren't there. They've only gotten their information from whatever their media bubble is, whatever political island that they exist on, whatever tribe that they're a member of, and that is their perspective. And they really aren't interested in what anyone else has to say that actually has the scope of eyewitness testimony that somebody like myself might have. And my observations are sometimes controversial because I disagree with the government narrative on most of what I write, but I also disagree with the right-wing tribe on a lot of their reactions and a lot of their assumptions and presuppositions about what took place that day. I'll continue on. I said, though I've read through over 100 indictments and legal filings against others, so I pulled his indictment up from the internet and settled in for my first cup of coffee for some light reading. I didn't get far before my blood pressure once again began spiking. Charles Donahoe is a 33-year-old president of his North Carolina-based Proud Boys chapter and faced 6 criminal charges: conspiracy, obstruction of an official proceeding, obstruction of law enforcement during civil disorder, destruction of government property, entering and remaining in a restricted building or grounds, disorderly conduct in a restricted building or grounds. The introduction to the charging document contains the same basic template language used in all such J6 indictments, which is an overview narrative of what was taking place that day in the Capitol before protesters arrived and a brief synopsis of what followed. Then they get into the details of the activities of the person being charged. By the time I got to page 5, paragraph 20 of this particular 18-page indictment document, my number one problem with all things January 6 related once again took over my thoughts for this day. That would be Saturday. Paragraph 20 reads, and I quote, "By 2:30 p.m., crowd members had begun to force entry into the building by breaking windows and ramming open doors. The crowd was not lawfully authorized to enter or remain inside the Capitol building, and no crowd member submitted to security screenings or weapons checks by Capitol Police or other security officials. Other crowd members encouraged and otherwise assisted the forced entry." I continue. There is nothing fictional in paragraph 20, but please know and understand these actions described were taken under the watchful eyes of dozens of fully armed law enforcement officers whose very charge is both the protection of that building and the congressional occupants therein. It doesn't matter if those forcing entry were simply workaday Trump supporters, Proud Boys, 3%ers, Antifa, or even undercover government conspirators working for the FBI or directly under the command of Pelosi and McConnell. Can you name one other seat of government anywhere in the world where this would have been allowed? Individuals violently breaching the building without security officers, police, or soldiers firing their weapons at those individuals to stop the breach. Had Capitol Police fired on the persons breaking those windows and forcing open locked doors, over 90% of Americans of all political stripes would have condoned the shootings as justified, especially after seeing the videos of those break-ins. It's one of the reasons in my earliest reporting that I felt the shooting of Ashley Babbitt was justifiable. Now I'm going to get into the Ashley Babbitt thing here and explain more detail in a little while. But I'm going to go back and comment a little bit about what I just said here. I said, had Capitol Police fired on the persons breaking those windows and forcing open those doors, over 90% of Americans would have agreed. The problem is, and the reason why some people reacted to that and criticized me for that statement or that estimate or that opinion about 90%, is because so many people have only seen the videos from their media bubble of the instances where doors were either opened by Capitol Police officers themselves, where they were waved in by Capitol Police officers themselves, or where Capitol Police officers had a very nice and pleasant conversation with somebody and said, look, yeah, you know, I disagree with you coming in, but look, you guys be careful in there. Don't mess anything up. Don't break anything, and just, you know, behave yourself, that sort of thing. That's a tacit invitation or certainly permission anyway. And we saw that in a recent acquittal in one of the J6 defendants cases last week, where the individual was in fact acquitted for of all charges on a bench trial by a DC judge in federal court, because the judge said that there was reasonable evidence that the guy believed he was going inside the building with permission from the police. I'll cover that a little bit more as well. But if the only thing you saw was the other media bubble, where you only saw the violence against Capitol Police officers and you only saw the breaking and entering, and that's the only perspective that you have of this entire episode, then you probably are like some of those that come in and believe that every person there should have been shot. And that's wrong also. So let me continue with what I had to say. And I'm going to start the last sentence about Ashley Babbitt. I said, especially after seeing the videos, it's one of the reasons in my earliest reporting that I felt the shooting of Ashley Babbitt was justifiable. Parenthetically, I continue, I said, we've since learned much more about that situation, Babbitt's specific actions leading up to that shot, and the background of the officer who killed her, changing my own perspective of her death, which is what any fair-minded journalist or any fair-minded individual would do, given more data and more access to information and truth. And we certainly have a lot more information about that circumstance, that situation. And we even got more video subsequent than the video that was provided by, you know, John Sullivan, the Antifa guy who first, Jaden X, as he's called, who released that first video of the officer shooting Ashley Babbitt. So I continue. What has not changed is the ample video evidence of those who did violently force their way past police officers and then engage in actual breaking and entering of the locked Capitol building. Yes, there are other video examples of nonviolent, non-forced entry, but those were after the first violent breaches. In my own FBI interview last October, I was expressing my frustrations and questions about why Capitol Police, who had more than enough capability and firepower to stop the unarmed protesters, yet didn't, and one of the special agents in that interview asked me, what were they supposed to do, shoot them? Well, my answer then, as it still remains today, is yes. But I take this a little bit further than just, yeah, the cops should have just started randomly firing on protesters. In fact, as I explained to those FBI agents, had Capitol Police, and this is the part that so many missed, because once they saw that line, when I said, yes, they should have fired, they didn't read any further. They just went down to the comment section and boom, 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 started attacking. I continue with my article. In fact, as I explained to those FBI agents, had Capitol Police and DC Metro officers simply drawn their weapons, instead, law enforcement played a game of rope-a-dope with the advancing crowd, pretending to hold one set of barricades, retreat to the next set of barricades, hold it for an hour, then passively allow a small handful of individuals to break through that first west side window and force the adjacent door open from the inside. Then, inexplicably, the law enforcement officers on the west side of the building pulled back, chatting amongst themselves and texting on their cell phones as hundreds of non-violent protesters and rally participants filed past them through the opened and unprotected doorways. All of this captured in my own videos. Of the estimated 2,500 citizens who entered the Capitol building, some 800 have been thus far charged with crimes. Most of those charges are nothing more than the glorified trespassing misdemeanors, including parading, picketing, and obstruction of official proceedings. Only 41 individuals have been charged with any type of conspiracy related to January 6. Additionally, Department of Justice officials estimate that just 200 to 225 will even ultimately be charged with any kind of violence. These numbers are but a micro fraction of the hundreds of thousands who attended the rally on the 6th. My personal estimate is between 400,000 to 600,000. I actually have a video published on Rumble that anybody can go see that I actually do a crowd analysis, about a 20-minute video. And I break it down. I do the math based on the acreage of the ellipse and the Washington Monument lawn, and they can anybody can go look at my analysis of the crowd size. This is why in virtually every interview I've given in the last several months, I've made this statement. 200 people with bear spray and sticks against a fully armed police force does not an insurrection make. Now, anybody who continued to read this article without stopping at my comment about Ashley Babbitt or about Capitol Police using their firearms against the more violent perpetrators, if they stopped there and didn't read comments like that, that's the reason for their errant assumptions about who I am and what my beliefs are related to the totality of January 6th. Going back, I'll read that last statement again. I've made this statement in every interview I've done over the last several months. 200 people with bear spray and sticks against a fully armed police force does not an insurrection make. Therein lies the fiction. But the most significant number of the day is that there were only a small handful of protesters, a few dozen police officers, and a couple well-positioned independent videographers, who actually witnessed that initial West Side violent breaking and entering of the Capitol building. The several hundred who had then streamed through that open door minutes later only saw Capitol Police and D.C. Metro officers standing around in small groups, chatting amongst themselves and with other protesters. There was no do not enter signs anywhere, and not a single officer warning those people in line to go into the building not to enter. That is exactly why only days ago, U.S. District Judge Trevor McFadden said it was not unreasonable for January 6th defendant Matthew Martin to believe that law enforcement officials were letting some protesters inside the Capitol and then acquitted him of all charges. They, whoever they is, created the fiction of January 6th by their inaction that day. The conspiracy theories evolve and persist because they will not answer the single most important question of the day. Who ordered the Capitol Police to stand down and not take the required, necessary, and lawful actions to defend the Capitol building, the Vice President, and attending members of Congress? Of course, until we know the answer to that question, we'll not know who the true conspirators were behind January 6th. Instead, those thousands of pages of indictments, charging documents, legal filings, and everything Pelosi's hand-picked House Select Investigative Committee produces is nothing more than pulp fiction. End of article. So let's just dive right in. The first comment came from somebody named Terry Cook, and he quoted me from the article. He said, in my FBI interview last October, I was expressing my frustrations and questions about why Capitol Police, who had more than enough capability and firepower to stop the armed protesters, yet didn't. And one of the special agents asked me what we were supposed to do, shoot them? My answer then and still remains yes. And his response was, what a stupid comment, really. Shoot unarmed citizens for trespassing? You're an idiot. No, Mr. Cook, I did not advocate, recommend that Capitol Police or any other law enforcement agent shoot unarmed citizens for trespassing. When you take a hammer, a 2x4, a stolen Capitol Police officer's shield or a crowbar, and you are not able to enter a doorway, even with those objects, and instead you choose a window to bust through, and then you crawl through that window, and then you unlock the door from the inside, that's not trespassing. That's breaking and entering. So my question for you, Mr. Cook, is, are you willing to allow me to come trespass under your definition, your home, and I can expect to not take a bullet to the head or to the chest in the process? Somebody else commented on his comment. Hardy LaBelle said, agree 100%. The conclusion that the cops should have started killing unarmed civilians is fucking insane. Well, that wasn't my conclusion, and that wasn't my assertion, and that wasn't what I advocate. First of all, I can guarantee you, Mr. LaBelle, that if somebody comes after you with a crowbar or another blunt force object, and begin swinging that in your direction, and you're armed with a firearm, that you're probably going to use it, assuming that you're a Second Amendment advocate. I don't know. I haven't looked up your politics. But the bottom line is that we do have a tradition in this particular country of being able to protect ourselves. It doesn't have to be equal force used if we are in fear for our life. And yes, you can be killed with a baseball bat. And baseball bats were carried that day as well, as were axe handles and other types of weapons. And they were used against law enforcement officials. I have that on video if you'd like to take a look. I responded and I said, answer the primary question, which he didn't answer. Name another seat of power anywhere in the world where deadly force would not have been used against those breaking in windows and doors. Total context matters. Hardy LaBelle came back and said, yes, context matters. This is America. Take that authoritarian bullshit back to jolly old England or the fatherland. Here, we put the sovereignty of our citizens first. Read the Constitution, dumbass. It's not long or complicated. I asked him then, I said, the Constitution condones smashing through locked doors and busting open windows? LaBelle continued, are you fucking nuts? You believe that it would be appropriate for cops to kill citizens who were illegally entering a public building? When you assert that 90% of Americans would support that, you are dead wrong. If you count yourself a constitutionalist of any stripe, go back and reread that document. You'll see that it does not grant the state the right to use lethal force against our citizens. Well, actually, the Constitution does allow for lethal force to be used against citizens. In fact, both the 5th and the 14th Amendment state that no person shall be deprived of life and liberty or property without due process. So, yeah, it does say shall not be deprived of life without due process. And, yeah, due process is not easy in a violent situation, which is why we have a tradition of self-defense. And we also have a tradition of protecting our property. It is exactly why, as I stated in my article, that no other seat of power or government in the world would have allowed to happen what happened that day. And my question, my primary question, is why did the government allow that to happen? Where were they receiving their orders from? Who were they receiving their orders from? And what were those orders? Because none of that has been answered yet. Probably the most well-known officer in the entire J6 episode, who's been allowed to do interviews with mainstream media sources and that sort of thing, and he was also interviewed and featured in the HBO documentary about January 6th, a documentary which, by the way, used a lot of my own video. And Officer Dunn was not only carrying an automatic weapon, not only did he insinuate at one point during the crisis that he would in fact use that on citizens, but he also refuses to answer the question. And some reporters have asked him the hard question. It was not asked in the HBO documentary because that was a very, very one-sided documentary. That documentary conforms to Pelosi's narrative. But the question he will not answer when asked is, what were your orders that day? And he refused, and he flat out says, I heard him in a podcast, a New York Times podcast, with a New York Times reporter who asked him that very question two or three or four times, and he said, no, I will not talk about and I will not reveal what our command orders were that day. Let's jump down to another guy, another comment. This is from David Messel. If you buy into any of this spin, and that's what it is, do not consider yourself a patriot or a constitutionalist. You are neither. Well, I asked him, I said, spin, what spin? I was there. I have hours of personal video and written dozens of articles based on my own eyewitness experience. So what is your spin of the day? I haven't yet seen or heard or read an answer from him. Oh, and we had another guy who just simply wrote, TLDR, too long, didn't read. And I usually respond to people that write that. I say, plenty of meme pages for people like you who don't read. Then Paul Stewart. He said, the thing is, by our own written constitution, it tells us that if the government is corrupt, we as citizens are told by this constitution to forcibly take it back to the people. So was it insurrection or people trying to take back their government? Besides, I would bet that the leaders of this group were not all part of the aforementioned group, but Antifa members planted by Pelosi and company. Okay. Paul Stewart gives me an idea that his particular media bubble is that more extreme right-wing side that saw every single person that was standing on the battle line as an Antifa member wearing Trump clothing. And I'm sorry, Mr. Stewart, that's just not the case. I was there. I saw four or five different types of people when I was there. I did, in fact. I mean, I saw some Antifa members there. John Sullivan, Jaden X, he's the guy that got a buttload of money from CNN and ABC News for his video and had to give it back after he was arrested. He is a known Antifa BLM operative. He's done black block videos on his own YouTube page where he demonstrates how to dress up all in black and all the gear and all the tactical gear and how to play the role out there doing Antifa stuff. And he was there. He got the video, the first release video of Ashley Babbitt being shot. And I've interviewed his brother, James Sullivan. As I said, I saw several people. I did see very apparent black bloc tactics being used by people wearing Trump clothing. I saw militia members in their militia garb with their patches, with their 3% patches and their regional militia insignias on. I saw plenty of those guys. I saw retired military officers wearing their pieces of their uniform from their days in the military out there on the front line battling officers or attempting to break inside the building or break through those barricade lines. I saw Trump supporters that were very obviously real Trump supporters that dove into the fray as well. They got excited, got caught up in it. They certainly didn't come planning for it. As I said, there was hundreds of thousands of people at the rally. Tens of thousands of those marched over to the Capitol later. A lot of those people, unfortunately, got caught up in the moment, got caught up in the excitement, and they dove in, and they're paying the consequence. And we're hearing from their testimony as well as they're going through their plea deal arrangements with the Department of Justice, their regrets, and they shouldn't have done that, and I lost my head, blah, 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 blah. There were all types. It was not just a bunch of Antifa people wearing Trump garb that were causing the problems that day. In addition to those groups of people, as I have done videos and written articles about, there were also very apparent professionals and government agents in the building. On February 24th of 2020, just a few weeks after the event, I wrote a story in which I revealed that through a source of mine that there were actual members of the U.S. military special forces embedded in that crowd, as well as U.S. Marshals and probably other federal agencies as well. Fast forward to January 3rd of this past year, or this year rather, 2022, Newsweek released an article that validated what I wrote 10 and a half months prior, where they talked about the FBI had consigned tactical units from every single federal agency that has such tactical units, and they had them either on site or at the ready or somewhere staged to react in case they were needed. And then they also mentioned in the article through this FBI source that the Newsweek writer had, that the FBI source told him that there were in fact military special forces ops in the crowd with orders to shoot to kill. And in my earliest reporting on this, I identified all of those groups. So it was not just a group of Antifa members wearing Trump garb and planted by Pelosi. Let's see. David Messel comes back. Wow, what an opinion, because they didn't shoot the protesters. Something is fake about the Capitol Police response. The fact that they didn't even draw their weapons is the biggest question that I have, because I will tell you, and I can show you in my own videos, that when I covered this in my interview with the FBI, when he asked me, what were they supposed to do, shoot him? And I said, yeah, or they should have at least drawn down on him, because I said, and I followed up in that FBI interview. And if that transcript is ever released, which of course I won't get unless I am ultimately charged and I can acquire that transcript in my own discovery process. I said in that interview, I said, but when the guns came out, and I was there when they did, when those guns were drawn, that crowd became much more civilized. And they stood, the crowd stood down. When the guns came out, the people stopped. It's no more complicated than that. Daniel Catalano asked or said, he said, what have you seen about Babbitt's and the officer that shot her background to make you think it was unjustified? And then somebody else, Susan Gore, responded to him, said, I would like to know that as well, but I bet he won't elaborate on that. Well, Susan, I've elaborated many times on this. I've written many articles about it. I've done podcasts about it. But I'll answer your question in brief. What did I see about Babbitt and the officer that shot his background to make you think it was unjustified? Let me start by saying what I thought. Well, actually, I don't even really have to explain why I thought it was originally justified, because the hallway where that window was busted open and that Ashley Babbitt jumped into that window trying to get through that window was the actual hallway where members of Congress were being evacuated out of the House chamber. And the law enforcement officer who pulled the trigger was actually the officer inside the House chamber who took the podium and went up at the podium when the Capitol had been breached and told them that tear gas had been released inside the rotunda and that everyone needed to reach under their seats and pull that, you know, that oxygen bag or whatever it was, a breathing bag out of the bottom of their seats, and that they needed to get down and hide behind their chairs, and that and gave them some other thing, told them to take their pins off of their jackets or their lapels, and anything identifying them as a member of Congress so that as they're being extricated, they would not be a target. Because at this point, look, can we just be as fucking real and logical as possible here? At this point, the people in that room, including that particular law enforcement officer, had no idea that this crowd outside the door that had already breached and was already inside the rotunda and was already making their way toward the House chamber, they had no idea that this crowd was only carrying bear spray sticks and flagpoles. They had no idea that this crowd was not fully armed with ARs, whatever else. They had no idea. So this particular officer began warning congressmen, congresspeople about what they needed to do, advising them on process and the tactics that they needed to take to safely be evacuated. And then after moving them into that hallway, he took up position to protect that hallway. Now, by the time this thing started happening in that little small area where Ashley Babbitt was shot, there was a tremendous amount of chaos at that time. There was a lot of law enforcement in there. Law enforcement was actually guarding that door. They were basically brushed aside, and then violent individuals began smashing those windows out. We've seen the video. It's very clear. It's very well documented. Particularly the earliest video, which we've seen over and over and over and over and over. The one that John Sullivan captured and released. And in that video, suddenly we just see a female leap into that open window that had just been smashed through, and then the shot is fired. She falls back, boom. And then all kinds of conspiracy theories have come forth after that. Didn't really happen. She's not really dead. It was all faked. I've seen these videos. The podcasts of people doing analysis and showing how every second of that incident was faked. What they don't have the advantage of is that I was there. I literally, with my own eyes, as close as 6 feet from her, saw her as she was already expired. In fact, I texted immediately after I saw her body, as they were wheeling her out on a gurney, I texted to somebody and said, there's been shots fired. A civilian female has been hit. She's not going to make it. You can dismiss all the conspiracy theories you've heard about her not being dead. I saw dead Ashley Babbitt with my own eyes that day. But the question was, what have you seen about Babbitt's and the officer that shot hers background to make you think it was unjustified? As I said, when she leapt through that window and he took that shot, and I was aware that that hallway was being used to evacuate Congress members, I believed at the time, and I wrote at the time, that he was probably the only Capitol Police officer that day who actually did his job. Yes, I wrote those words. Then many months have passed, and more videos have been released from different angles. And eventually, we have seen video that showed us that not only was Ashley Babbitt basically chewing out one of the guys that was busting that window open, that when it was completed, she literally cold-cocked him. I mean, it's in a video. She literally punches the guy right in the face. The chaos continued, and then there was a tactical unit coming up the stairs right behind her. And this is my opinion. It's also the opinion of the family, but I tend to agree with them after you see analysis or after you take the time to analyze the video, all of the videos from all the angles. I am of the opinion that she panicked and she wanted out of that chaotic, claustrophobic, dangerous, as she perceived, a more dangerous spot as this tactical unit, fully armed, was coming up behind her, and she wanted to get the hell out of there. And that was the only escape, because she could not escape to the left, to the right, behind, and she saw an open window and she leapt through it. Irrefutably, she was unarmed. Irrefutably, the officer who shot her was probably in his own panic mode at the time as well. We know, that, by the way, it wasn't until August of last year that they finally released his identity, although very, very smart online sleuths and also independent investigators had identified him already months before, because they were able to match his cufflinks and his articles of clothing from the John Sullivan video with the video that was released from inside the Capitol building, or the House chamber rather, and they were able to match that clothing and they were able to identify that way. So my perspective has changed in that we know that she was unarmed. We also know that that hallway was now clear. There were no longer any Congress people in that line. I am not going to say that it was justified or unjustified. I am going to finally just come down on the side of this was a horrible mistake. It was a horrible situation. And as I said before, this particular officer had no idea at the time what was waiting for him on the other side of the door. But what he was experiencing on the other side of the door was a locked door that was being smashed in. You smash into my window in the middle of the night, I've got several 15-round magazines ready to empty in your direction if you come through my window. That's to protect me, my family, and anybody else in my charge. And you know who was in his charge? The elected representatives of the United States of America. And that was his job. Additionally, according to the law, and you may not like this law. I'm not advocating for the law. I'm not making excuses for the law. I'm not saying it's a good law or a bad law. I'm just telling you what the law is. Under the law, it was a justified killing. The circumstances itself, now we know that it was certainly not an unnecessary shooting. It was certainly a tragic event, but he had a legal right to make that shot, like it or not. That's very, very difficult for some people to except particularly her family, I can imagine. And I would not to belabor this point, but I would argue that that any fair-minded American would just understand that in the heat of that moment, the chaos of that moment, the circumstances of what was happening, both behind the officer and in front of that officer, the smashing, the shouting, the chanting, the not knowing what weapons were behind that door, that's the reason why he was cleared in the shooting. Again, like it or not. And I'm not telling you whether I like it or not. I'm just telling you that I can come to a reasonable conclusion that it was a horrible situation. I don't know what I would have done in that situation either. I can only tell you what I would do if you come through my window. Let's see. Susan Gore said that she bet that I would not elaborate on that. But guess what? I did elaborate on it for you. I hope you watched this video, Susan. Let's jump down to a comment by Darren Evans. The only losers here are those here that spend so much energy hating the wrong people. Your ignorance of facts and willingness to flat out lie to push your liberal agenda is appalling. Liberalism is a mental disorder. I don't disagree with you, Darren. I think liberalism may in fact be rooted in a mental disorder. But you identified the wrong person in that regard. You certainly misidentified me. You certainly are the one that are ignorant of the facts. When you say that my ignorance of the facts and my willingness to flat out lie to push a liberal agenda in this comes from a position of somebody who's completely, totally, 100% ignorant of who I am. And that's all I need to say about that. Next, I'm just going to skim over a little bit of this longer thread. This was initiated by Morales Jared, and basically it has to do with the Ashley Babbitt situation again. As the thread continues, people are talking about how they would prefer not to get shot while breaching a barricaded door, and then Morales says that the police let them in. Well, again, this officer had no idea what had transpired outside, and this is validated by the data that we know that has come in, because even the head of their union, only days, literally days after the event itself, came out and said that even though the leadership of the Capitol and the leadership of the police department itself knew about the potential of violence that day, because the FBI had in fact warned them, in fact the FBI had warned them days in advance for the potential for war. That's a Washington Post headline. Days before, the FBI notified Capitol authorities, Capitol Police, the president's office, and others of the potential for war on January 6th, quote unquote, Washington Post headline. So much so that the police union head said the fact that they knew what the potential was that day and the fact that they did not warn their frontline officers or prepare them, did not adequately have them prepared with the right tactical gear. Some of these guys were thrown out there on the front lines and got concussions, compressed vertebrae, many, many other injuries, of which, again, I've captured on my own video. It's all out there on Rumble. You can go look at it yourself, and you can see dozens of police officers being hauled off the front line and receiving first aid behind. They were getting the shit kicked out of them for about an hour on that west side, a little over an hour. These weren't just protesters. Morales said the police let them in. Well, yeah, there's a lot of things that happened inside and happened on other parts of the Capitol that other officers were completely unaware of. And as the fog of war, and what's the other saying I'm looking for? The first casualty of war is the truth. And when I was in the building and the shot was fired, all of a sudden I heard police chatter. All of the radios were exploding about shots being fired. They had no idea who did it. They were under the impression, obviously, with hundreds of people pouring into the Capitol after a violent scrum line outside for over an hour, in which many of their officers, and including many of the ones that I have on video that then repositioned themselves back inside the building, had no idea where this shot had come from. All they are hearing are calls for triage. They're hearing shots fired, confusion, no idea what was going on. But the one thing that did happen is their guns came out. In response to a Morales, Jared Missy Marshall responds and says, Babbitt was crawling through a hole in a barricaded door. It's on film, as is the footage of cops holding the line against an angry MAGA mob. But hey, you people have all sorts of alternative facts. So, well, obviously, we know who she kind of gives her politics away, or what tribe that she's a part of. And then Morales says, if anyone should have been shot, it should have been well before her. Well, I have argued from the beginning that this whole thing should have stopped at the front line had the officers drawn down on the very first group of people that breached the very first barricade. This day doesn't happen. Because if they just had brandished their weapons against people who violently came over those barricades, violently shoved officers to the ground in the very first barricade breach, they were fully justified by law at that moment to pull their weapons. But they didn't. And my question remains, why? Who told them not to? When the violence escalated on that West Side Terrace for over an hour and dozens of law enforcement officers were being wounded, bloodied, concussed, and other injuries, who was making the calls? Who up the chain did not allow them to defend themselves adequately? Who up the chain allowed that first group of individuals to make it to that window and bust that window out? Because at that window where it was being busted out, there was no shortage of law enforcement officers standing right behind them at that very moment. They're not seen on camera at that moment, but they were there, because I have it as you come up later, as I came up those steps later, and you just see lines and lines of cops. They were there. Somebody told them not to react to somebody busting the windows out on the Capitol building of the United States of America with a joint session of Congress going on, the Vice President of the United States in there, and they weren't allowed to defend that door, that window? Come on, guys. Really? Ken Freeman says, wouldn't even have to shoot. A couple of flashbangs or tear gas, and that would have cleared the place. Ken, flashbangs and tear gas were being used for over an hour before they even broke through that first window. It didn't stop anyone from their actions. I know. I was outside when the tear gas was being deployed, when the other crowd control elements were being deployed, the pepper sprays, the flashbangs. One exploded right at my feet. Shrapnel jumped up, hit me right in the knee. I carried a big old bruise on my knee for months afterwards. Freeman goes on to say, he says, I was watching John Sullivan's video feed live. Did not see any of that. I saw cops move barricades with little or no resistance. I saw someone in a police uniform open a door and hold it open for people, walk upstairs. He goes on about what he saw from John Sullivan's live video feed. Well, first of all, John Sullivan's live video feed did not include the violence on the front line. And then it showed him cheering and celebrating as he walked through the door with this other videographer girl. And then into the rotunda where they were, you know, we did this shit, we did this shit. And then later on, the video of that he captured of Ashley Babbitt actually being shot. He didn't see any of the flashbangs because whatever bubble, whatever media bubble he's isolated inside of, whatever island that he's lost on, this is the only thing that Ken Freeman has seen from that day. It's amazing because obviously the mainstream media has shown nothing but the other side. The flashbangs, the tear gas, the pepper spray, the violence. I don't know where you get your news, but if you don't watch all of it, you have no idea what's going on in the world. You certainly can't make a proper evaluation or come to your even, you know, learned or experiential or intelligent conclusions using whatever common sense you have. But yeah, all of that stuff was happening. Ken Freeman even goes on to say tear gas was prohibited that day. They did throw a few flashbangs. It wasn't prohibited. I was catching it all day outside. The only reason that the tear gas was ineffective outside, it was an incredibly windy day, and the tear gas would dissipate immediately. But it was also deployed inside, and there's actually a well-known photo. This photo was published on January 7th, the next morning, in Market Watch. And in that photo, you can see me from behind. You can see my backpack with my camera tripod out of the backpack. And you can see me walking into a tear gas cloud right at the House chamber door that had just been cleared out, where all of those people were pounding on it and shouting. Hundreds of people were lined up and trying to, you know, get in there, or chanting anyway. There weren't hundreds trying to get in there, but there were a handful that were trying to bust that door down. It's that famous shot from the other side of the door. You can see where the security guys on the other side of the door have their handguns drawn and pointed at that door, and you can see a face looking through the broken window. On the other side of that door, I was there shooting film, and I was there when the tear gas was deployed, and everybody started screaming. They stopped chanting, you know, whose house, our house, and USA, and singing national anthem. All of a sudden, they're screaming, tear gas, and they stampede, and I have to get off and get up against a wall and kind of behind a little corner there in the hallway. And as the stampede runs the other direction, as soon as it cleared out, I turn around and I start heading towards wherever the action was with my camera, and that's when whoever captured that photo of me from behind and ended up the next morning on Market Watch. And you can see me walking into that tear gas cloud. So to say that the tear gas was prohibited that day, a little bit of ignorance. As we said before, while some readers claim Ashley Babbitt deserved what she got, others say that no one going through those doors should have been shot. And I'm sorry, but in the heat of that moment and in the middle of that chaos, you can't make an intelligent or even a common sense, anything close to a common sense conclusion on either side of that. Not unless you were there, not unless you saw what was happening. And as I said earlier, existing law, whether you like it or not, affords those officers to use deadly force in those circumstances. And they had the right to do it. Some would say that they exercised great restraint. I say that they were not allowed. And I certainly saw some circumstances with my own eyes and captured in my own video of guys who would have been justified in the right to use deadly force when they were being attacked. I'm telling you, when you're having a flagpole launched at you like a spear and you take that in the eye, that's a deadly weapon. Some of these guys were being struck with very heavy blunt force objects. I don't care what state you're in. I don't care what country you're in. You're justified to respond, to stop the threat to your life as a private citizen or law enforcement. So don't tell me that the law doesn't say that. Over and over again, these people who were criticizing the article said that there was no right for officers to use firearms against protesters. We're not talking about protesters any longer. Let's be very specific about the types of people that were there. Once again, there were hundreds of thousands of people there for a rally. They may also have been protesting the vote, the 2020 election vote. So they were rally participants and protesters. They were there to exercise their constitutional First Amendment rights. Absolutely, 100%. Then there were marchers, also went to the Capitol to protest, to let their voices be heard. But there were people that preceded them that were there before Trump finished his speech that violently pushed law enforcement officers on the ground, on video, and breached the first barricade. And then after that barricade had been moved, hidden, removed with all the signs, the trespassing and do not enter signs and Capitol close signs, all of those were deliberately taken down. We've seen those videos of those provocateurs doing that job. They had a job to do that day, so there was that type of person there as well. And they removed those signs, they hid those signs, they turned them over on the ground. And then as the thousands of individuals were making their way from the ellipse in the Washington Monument lawn and marching towards the Capitol, they saw no restrictions whatsoever onto the actual Capitol lawn. And then they were able to move beyond that. They were able to move up to the terrace, and they were able, a lot of people just stood back and witnessed what was happening, and that what was the violence that was taking place began before Trump even finished his speech. So there was a completely different element of people. And when we're talking about people that are now assaulting law enforcement officers and doing their best to breach barricades and launching deadly blunt force objects at these officers, those are no longer protests. Does it raised to the level of an insurrection? No, I've already said that. I've said that many times. I said that in this particular podcast already. 200 people with violent intent carrying, you know, bear spray and sticks and flagpoles against a fully armed police force does not an insurrection make. I stand by that. But for some reason, inexplicably, law enforcement was not allowed to do what they were capable of doing that day to stop the violent breach of the Capitol. The bottom line is that it did not have to happen. They had the means, they had the legal authority, they had the firepower, and they had the numbers, because they were not assaulted by 400 or 600,000 people. They were not assaulted by 20,000. They weren't assaulted by 2,500, by the Department of Justice's own estimate, based upon video surveillance, tens of thousands of hours of video from that day. Only about 200 to 225 people actually committed violent acts against law enforcement that day. Well, there was more than an adequate force to take care of that. And for some reason, they were ordered not to. So I'm not going to carry this any further. I have no problem with people disagreeing with me online. It happens every day. I mean, even in my own locals community, where people actually are, where our paid subscribers are, they make no bones about it if they disagree with me on something. It's a much more polite community over there. When they disagree with me, we talk. We reason it out. We agree to disagree. We're not calling each other names or accusing each other of being something that we're not in the process. As I said before, when you're in a paid community, it was like anything else. Anything you pay for, you take better care of, as a general rule. And it also keeps the trolls out. And the people that do follow TPC, me, over on the locals community, are there because, specifically because they can read, and they do read what I write before they comment, whether they like it or not. These individuals, many of which I've quoted in this particular podcast here, obviously did not read the entirety of the article. They saw one line, they ran with it. Or maybe they read the entire article or skimmed it or whatever, and they certainly are not familiar with the long history of what I've written about this event as well as others. So their ignorance showed forth in their comments. But I felt like that this was worth me coming back to, circling back, if I can quote Secretary Psaki, if I could circle back to this particular subject yet once again and try to clear things up. The bottom line is that there were many, many, many types of people there that day. Depending upon what island you're on, what media bubble you ensconce yourself in, you only know what you know. And so if you hear me say something that doesn't conform with what you've seen, maybe you just haven't seen everything, especially if you weren't there like I was, especially if you didn't have hours of video taken by yourself like I have, especially if you haven't been working on subsequent investigations about certain characters on both sides of the political aisle involved in January 6th, like I have for the last, 14, 15 months now. So my encouragement, if you are still here on this podcast and you're one of these people that I have addressed in this, is take a step back. Don't open your trap until you know what you're talking about. If you're going to comment on an article, read the entire article. I had somebody yesterday on another article I wrote who, I'm not joking, actually said in her first statement that she only read my teaser line. She didn't even open or admitted that she didn't open or read the article. And then she proceeded to write 6 paragraphs of commentary of only about my teaser line, which a teaser is designed to get people catch their attention. It's called clickbait. Get them to open the article and read the article. Well, she didn't bother to do that. And she admitted it. And she even said, I may be off base here, but I haven't read the article. But she went after me for my teaser line. So that's what we deal with on social media. That's what we deal with trying to navigate this brave new world that we're living right now. And that is it. All right. Once again, I'm Steve Baker. I am known sometimes as the pragmatic constitutionalist. Please check us out on all of the places where we are. This video will be on Rumble. We will be, of course, our locals community, Facebook. We have 2 Facebook pages. Find those both if you can. One is called Steve Baker TPC. The other one is our main page where I've taken these quotes from today. We're also on MeWe, Gab, Parler, Twitter. And that's it. That's all I got for you today. I will actually post additional links to several of the articles. In fact, I'll probably include about 3 or 4 of the articles that I've written prior to this for those who are interested in really knowing everything that I saw and everything that I think about January 6th. And I would encourage you to look up some of the podcasts on that as well. All right. I'm out of here. Y'all be well.